Hello, and welcome to the Austin Therapy Podcast. I'm Kate. I have a background in psychology, and I have read all of Jane Austen, and I am joined by my sibling,
Teresa. I have a background in social work, and I have read Pride and Prejudice on this first season of the podcast, and now everything but two chapters of Northanger Abbey, so I'm making my way through Jane Austen.
Yeah. So today we are talking about chapter 27, 28, and 29 of Northanger Abbey.
Yay!
What did you think, Teresa?
Oh, so many feelings. I think I felt like I went crazy reading this.
Okay.
I just felt a little nutty. Multiple times I was like, am I? What? No. Me? Huh? So I think we should just go through, like, start with chapter 27 and we'll go through and talk about what happens in the rest.
Yeah, I think what you're describing is an accurate assessment of probably how Catherine feels through these chapters.
Probably. Although there was one point where I was like, I feel like Catherine's smarter than I am. How did this happen? So we'll talk about that in a second. It's not very far into this chapter 27.
Okay. So yeah, chapter 27 starts and Catherine's gotten a letter from Isabella.
Yes. And I mean, I started off the letter being like, go away. I hate you so much. I'm over her.
Yeah, you should be.
And she's trying to be like, oh, I'm so ashamed of my idleness. Screw you. No one cares. And then she tries to like spin this tale about what happened with James that isn't really true. And also being like, I feel like there's some misunderstanding, but we're still together. Like, she tries to pretend like they're still together, which is weird. But then I had this moment where I was like, okay, what if Isabella is not actually evil, but instead is a woman who has been taken in by a evil man and tricked, and now she's having to deal with the fallout from it, and should I actually feel sorry for her? And then I was like, no, I'm still mad at her. But I did have this moment where I was like, am I unjustly shaming Isabella for what happened between her, James, and Captain Tilney? I mean, don't get me wrong, I hate Captain Tilney. I think he's a dick. But part of me is also like, why is it easier for me to be more angry with Isabella than anyone else in that scenario?
I think there's the piece of, we have seen that Isabella is intertwined with Catherine. We know her a little bit more. We know that she's supposed to be a friend and that Catherine has seen her with some sincerity. We don't know Captain Tilney very well, other than he kind of swooped in and is villainous. And I think that both can be true, that Isabella got taken in by a shitty man and she has accountability and we don't have to like her.
Yes. And I did come around to that towards the end of it, being like, right, remember all the time she was really horrible just on her own before this scenario. And I think it's maybe a both end. When I think about women in this time period, particularly how important it is to marry and what that means and what that looks like, I can maybe hold a little more softness even for women who are maybe more hurtful than I would want them to. But that being said, I think Isabella has done many things that makes her extremely unlikable and extremely hurtful. And I am glad that Catherine sees that.
I think the thing that frustrates me about this letter is that Isabella isn't trying to be accountable for her piece in things. I think it would be one thing if she were writing Catherine and apologizing, if she were writing Catherine and saying, I've been such a fool, if she were writing and giving an explanation, but she's literally lying in this. And you can hear her do the double talk with Captain Tilney of like, she's more heartbroken over Captain Tilney and more upset over Captain Tilney than her ex-fiance.
Yes, I think that it's towards the very end of it that I came back to that, because initially when she is talking about Captain Tilney, she's like, he was a puppy who was following me around, and then he was off with some other girl, and it was hurtful, and blah, blah, blah. But I think when I realized that, like, oh no, like, this was sincere for her versus she was being led along, which it's a little bit of both. She talks about that she was wearing something and Captain Tilney told her that she looked beautiful and was turning the eye of everyone during that time. You can tell how important it was for her to have been complimented by him in that way towards the end of things. So I came back around to, right, I don't like you and you're not taking any accountability and you are harmful.
I think Catherine kind of sums it up best to Henry and Eleanor. She must think me an idiot, or she could not have written so. But perhaps this has served to make her character better known to me than mine is to her. And I think this speaks to that Catherine has always been genuine in this friendship.
Mm-hmm.
She thought that Isabella was too, but now that she's been opened up to the fact that she's a liar, she's sitting here reading all of this. And why the fuck are you mentioning that Captain Tilney thought you looked good in the turban that you wore one night? Why are you mentioning this to your friend that you were trying to get to write her brother to say that there's been a mistake? How stupid do you think she is? How oblivious do you think she is that she can't recognize that you are saying that his compliment to you is more important than James? That you are more hurt by Captain Tilney withdrawing his affection than James no longer being your fiance.
And I think that this letter does nothing to comfort Catherine in thinking that Isabella wouldn't do this again, right? Of like, okay, a mistake happened. The way that Isabella has written has made it very clear that if she were to get back together with James, this would likely be a reoccurrence. And she would then expect Catherine to be the one to mend the fences.
I think what Catherine learned from this letter was that Isabella uses people and she sees people for utility. That is basically what she's writing Catherine about. She's writing Catherine to get Catherine to do her a favor and fix her problem without ever actually being accountable for the fact that she caused the problem. Oh, I'm so worried that your brother might be mad at me. No, he broke up with you. You mutually broke up together. There must be some misunderstanding. No, you broke off the engagement so that you could be with Captain Tilney. Then he probably rolled you in the sack once and didn't stay with you.
She admits to not even writing James herself.
Because she knows she can't.
Exactly. But she plays it off as like, it's so distressing. I can't, you know, I'm so worried about it. Please write for me. She is trying to use that utility of Catherine to try and get back with James because she realizes, well, at least a proposal is better than no proposal.
I think it's really funny that as we've been reading through, I don't think there has been a single instance where you have felt anything other than disdain for Isabella.
Which is why I think I went crazy while reading these chapters.
And you read that letter and you were like Catherine at the beginning of the friendship.
Yes, and I don't know what happened in this. This is why I was like, I think Catherine's got smarter. Like, she's outsmarted me in this. And I think some of it is that we haven't read in a little bit. So my initial anger at Isabella for the end of the engagement is a little calmed. But also, I just found myself thinking a lot about gender roles and how that impacts the way I might be seeing this and how my own maybe internalized gender stuff might be clouding it. And then I remember all the horrible things that Isabella has done. And I'm like, no, she's just horrible. So I get to it. But I was having a conversation with myself while I was reading this.
Do you think that a piece of it is that you were kind of anticipating that from Catherine? And then when it didn't happen, you didn't get to have the glory of being smarter than Catherine?
Maybe. I don't think I expected Catherine. Well, maybe I did. I think there was a part of me while I was reading it thinking about Catherine going to Tilney and being like, how do you think I should respond to this? I think I should write my brother and be like, Catherine, no, don't. But then she didn't. And so, I mean, I'm very proud of Catherine. There's a lot of growth from Catherine in these chapters. And I also think some of the whimsy that I love about Catherine is lost in these chapters a little bit, right? She is a glass half full person. And I think she's had many lessons over the last few months that has made her realize, oh, sometimes the glass is half empty.
I actually think that even though Catherine is angry at Isabella, I do not think she basically is at the point of just like, I don't want her in my life. She has caused harm. She's caused too much hurt for me to want to continue any sort of acquaintance with her. And I think there's this piece in here with her back and forth with Henry about this, where he tells her that she basically has too much principle. And even though she's not going to understand why he's going to defend his brother, she's not out for revenge from Isabella. She just doesn't want to see her again. She's not wishing bad things happen to her. She's not wishing that her life falls apart. She's not saying her life's going to be horrible now that she's not with James. She's just saying, I don't care about her anymore.
She's not worth my time or my energy to care about.
And I actually think that is very much how Catherine has been throughout this. She rolls with things. She doesn't let things become huge and big and stick with her.
I think Catherine does let things become huge and big in her imagination. She thought General Tilney was a murderer. How is that not huge and big?
But like with the offenses that Isabella would give her, or even Isabella's brother, she didn't make up a story about how they were horrible. She wished that she was being kidnapped and that that would have made a good story, but it was boring, so it wasn't worth her time. The actual harm that comes to her doesn't stick. She gets bored when things are too nice, which is like maybe why she stuck with Isabella for so long. It wasn't boring.
No, Isabella and John certainly are interesting people. I am curious if this is the last we hear of Isabella. I mean, we've only got 2 chapters left, and this feels like an okay place to leave it for Catherine. But it's also a gothic parody, so part of me is like, maybe in the very last chapter, it will be like, then the Thorpes show up. Dun, dun, dun! And like, just leave us on a cliffhanger.
That would be weird.
So you're saying that doesn't happen?
I didn't say that. I just said that would definitely be weird. What did you think about her exchange with Henry Tilney about the letter?
I mean, he remains as he is of like, yeah, I'm not very surprised by my brother. And he's like, I'm not going to try and guess at his motivations, even though I probably know what they are. He's the same as Isabella. They have a lot of similarities. Their desires align in many ways, not in meritable ways, but in many ways. And I do love this line that he says, if the effect of his behavior does not justify him with you, we had better not seek for after the cause. It's kind of like, if you don't like what's happened, we probably shouldn't look back at why he did what he did, because I think that's going to make things worse. And I think it's going to make you hate him more.
And he's in the place of like, yeah, you're allowed to be mad at my brother for being a dick. But like, we don't need to sit here and analyze it. It's not complicated.
He is just a dick. He is exactly who he says he is.
Yeah. And that when she goes, then you do not suppose he ever really cared about her. I'm persuaded that he never did. And only made believe to do so for mischief's sake? Henry bowed his assent. And I love how he's just like, yep.
Sounds accurate.
Like, he's like, there's no point in us like dissecting this. Like, it is just that obvious.
He's just a jerk.
I appreciate that Catherine's just like, well, I do not like him then. And she kind of queries of like, what if your brother had actually harmed people who were good people? Like, what if he had actually hurt Isabella's heart? Like, if this were a good person that he manipulated away from a good situation, et cetera, et cetera. But I like that Henry basically said that if she was that type of person, one, probably wouldn't have worked, and also wouldn't have been the type of person that he would have pursued, because Captain Tilney seems to enjoy easy flirtations. Don't get me wrong, I don't think he's like morally going around and being like,
you are a good person,
I won't touch you. But I think that what Henry's trying to say is that these were two people who were attracted to each other because they mirrored each other. And that if Isabella had actually been in love, that the door would have never been open for Tilney. So he never would have even wanted to walk through it. Like, if when he went to ask her that first time to dance after Catherine had said no, she's engaged, and she was just like, no, I don't want to dance, I'm just here to enjoy it, I'm engaged, they wouldn't have danced.
They wouldn't have danced, and it wouldn't have gone any further.
Right. But that's not who she is. She would have flirted with him in that moment. She might have said that she's a fiance, but she did it in a, you know, I do have a fiance, I shouldn't dance with you, while getting up and dancing with him sort of way. So, yeah.
Good riddance to bad friends.
I love how Henry kind of continues to give these really cute sort of, like, earlier when he said that because she thought the best of people, like, he thought that she was the best of people. And in here where he goes, but your mind is warped by an innate principle of integrity and therefore not accessible to the cool reasonings of family partiality or a desire of revenge. And he like knows how to compliment Catherine the right way. It's a genuine thing where it's basically like you're too wholesome.
Yes, but in a nice way.
Yeah, and Catherine likes that. He complimented her out of bitterness.
Yeah, he complimented her on something that's important to her.
I think he enjoys that he can do that to and for her. Basically, the flirting is teasing, but it's genuine. It's really cute.
That's very cute. They're very soft and cute together.
Yeah.
And then the general leaves. Hurrah! Everyone rejoices and is happy.
Yeah, Catherine's like, wait, we're so much happier now. Oh my God.
I like this place. I want to be here. And then she's like, oh wait, have I overstayed my welcome though? I've been here a while.
It's such a cute little conversation where she's like thinking about it. I've been here for over weeks. That might be too long. What if Eleanor is sick of me and she wants me to go? How do I bring this up in conversation? How do I do this? And then it's in here that basically Eleanor's being in the middle of a speech about something very different to start forth her obligation of going away very soon. So Eleanor's like, I don't know, talking about a flower that she likes. And Catherine's just like, should I leave?
Catherine is like the social awkward friend.
And Eleanor's like, where is this coming from? What happened? Are you mad? Are you upset? What's going on? And Catherine doesn't get that a piece of why this was odd was because of how she delivered it. But again, for me, this highlights what we've been talking about, and that Catherine has a mind that's predisposed to anxiety.
Mm-hmm.
I can imagine her sitting and actually thinking, what if Eleanor is really upset with me? What if Eleanor wants me to leave but doesn't know how to tell me to leave? What if I'm invading her space? Oh my God, Eleanor must hate me. I got to figure this out. I got to tell her as soon as possible because maybe she doesn't. Maybe she doesn't hate me. Maybe everything's fine and we're cool. But oh my God, what if she does hate me? Oh, okay. But I guess I feel better if I ask her than if I just like overstay and overstay and overstay. And then she really hates me. Okay, I'm going to bring it up. I'm going to bring it up. I'm going to bring it up. She's talking about biscuits. Should I bring it up right now? Should I bring it up now? Now. And like, so understand her little anxious brain in this moment of, oh, Catherine, you are so cute. You're just going to squish your little brain. She was driven by anxiety to do this. And then as she's telling Eleanor, Eleanor's like, I mean, if your parents want you Pope, Eleanor's trying to figure out how Catherine got to this place.
Yeah, where did this come up of like, I should leave, right? You don't like me here. You don't want me here. I should leave, right? Right? Okay, I'll leave. Yeah, I'll just get going, right? I should leave, right?
And Eleanor's like, are you upset? Did your parents want you to go? Like, are you
not
enjoying
happy?
Our time? Yeah, it's so cute. That reaction from Eleanor also like very much signifies that there were no actual cues for Catherine's anxiety. There were no actual things there that made her anxiety true.
Yep.
Which is why it's what we would say is like a predisposition for anxiety versus being anxious in an actual situation where you should be anxious.
She has not been great at reading the social cues throughout this entire book.
And I guess I just really love that the Tilneys are just so gentle.
Mm-hmm.
Of like, where's this coming from? No, I like you. And Catherine's like, you like me? And they're like, yeah, I like you. Do you want to stay? Because if you want to go, we can make that happen. But I'd like it if you stayed. You want me to stay? Yes. Okay, I'll stay. I like it here too. They don't get offended that Catherine has these thoughts. They just recognize she's anxious and wants reassurance.
I think it endears Catherine even more towards Eleanor and towards the Tilney family. She starts to really realize that she's like, oh, I'm in love with Henry and I love his sister and I think they love me back and this could be great.
I mean, at this point, she also thinks that their dad loves her too.
Yes. Which he has given no indication otherwise. As he's leaving to go on his thing, he's like, everyone needs to make sure Catherine has the best time of her life. And they're like, okay, Dad, you're leaving, so she will.
I really like after they've gone through this exchange where Eleanor's like, if you want to leave, we can make that happen. And Catherine's like, no, 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 I want to stay. I could stay with you as long again. Like, I can stay for another month. Like, I love it here. And that it's all settled. And then there's this line of the kindness and earnest of Eleanor's manner in pressing her to stay, and Henry's gratified look on being told that her stay was determined, were such sweet proofs of her importance with them. I imagine she had this conversation with Eleanor where it's just like awkward and Eleanor's not exactly sure what's happening. And then she gets reassurance from Eleanor and she's elated. And Henry walks into the room and Catherine just goes, I'm staying for a month. It's just like really excited, sort of just like tells him like right away. And he's like, that's great. I'm really excited that you're staying too. And we're going to have so much fun. And like, it's just, she's just so cute, like a little confused puppy dog that they're just like so happy to have around.
I mean, she's definitely the one with puppy dog energy in this book.
Yes.
Maybe an anxious puppy dog, but still puppy dog energy.
She's my dog. She's Evie.
Yes, definitely. And then Tilney goes away because he has to go back to Woodston and do some business stuff. But she still has a lovely time with Eleanor. She's really enjoying herself.
Yeah, their friendship kind of deepens.
Mm-hmm. And then a carriage shows up at the house late at night.
Mm-hmm.
Awkward.
And Eleanor thinks it's Captain Tilney. Catherine goes to her room and she's trying to figure out what relationship she would want to have with Captain Tilney. And okay, he's the brother of my boyfriend. I should probably figure this out.
If we don't talk about Isabella and Bath, then it'll probably be fine. Like, those will just be no-go topics.
Mm-hmm. And then she gets to her room and someone reaches for the doorknob and opens her door and scares the crap out of her.
Yep. Which, like, I'm sure part of Catherine was like, I love this. This is amazing.
Finally, my ghost story begins. Yeah, but it's just Eleanor.
And it's sad.
Eleanor is very sad and Catherine tries to comfort her.
And she's being kicked out.
Mm-hmm. With no real explanation.
Nope. And none that Eleanor can provide. How mean of it of General Tilney to be like, yeah, Eleanor, you tell your best friend they have to leave this house and are never welcome back here. Yeah, that'll be great for your friendship. Like, I just feel so bad for Eleanor having to be that messenger.
And you can tell that Eleanor is trying to soften it as much as she can.
Yeah, of course.
I think she's also like devastated and confused and frustrated, but also she doesn't seem surprised.
I don't think she seems surprised, but I do think she's upset and gets put into a position, I think she thinks is unfair also.
I mean, it is, but I don't think she's surprised that her dad's put her in this position.
And it is. It's quite awful how it happens. Of Catherine's like, okay, well, you're leaving on Monday. So I guess like I'll leave on Monday too, and that'll be fine. And Eleanor has to break it to her of like, no, you're leaving in the morning and we're just sending you. We're not sending you with a servant to accompany you, which would be the proper thing to do for a lady traveling by themselves. And oh, and also we're not going to pay for it. And we're not going to give you time to tell your parents. So you're just getting in this carriage and going.
And the carriage is not taking you all the way. You will have to pay for post. You're going to be traveling with strangers.
Which is just terrifying.
And Catherine's been handling the news pretty well until that moment where it's no, you will have to leave at 7 o'clock tomorrow. No servant will be offered to you. And Catherine just sits down and like the air falls out of her.
It's unbelievable, right? She had just agreed to stay an extra month.
Mm-hmm.
And now they're like, bye.
And she was so sure that they loved her, right? That the general loved her, that Eleanor loved her, that Henry loved her. She's like, what the fuck happened?
I don't think she necessarily falters in the thought that Eleanor or Henry love her, but she is uncertain what happened with the general. And I have some potential guesses at what happened.
What do you think happened?
I think he found out her family doesn't have that much money and was like, all right, off you go. I'm not paying for you poor person to be in my home and be close. And like, I don't want you marrying my son. Because they've talked about how that was going to be a barrier for Isabella and Captain Tilney if the engagement mm-hmm. was actually real. It was like, yeah, our dad's never going to agree to that because they've got no money.
Right.
And so I think he's gone to London and he's met someone who knows Catherine's family and has been told, you know, her dad is just a clergyman, right?
And he's got like, what, I don't remember, like a dozen children.
And Catherine is not the oldest.
I think Catherine's the oldest female,
but she's got brothers.
Yes.
And many younger siblings. So like, she's not bringing much to this family. She's not going to expand your family position. That's my guess.
Okay.
That, or he like woke up one day and was like, I want her out, could also have happened.
Do you realize what Catherine's guess is?
No, I don't think I caught it.
The only thing that Catherine can think is that he found out that she thinks he's a murderer.
I didn't read it that he found that out. I thought I read it that she felt like there's no way he could have found that out because the only one who knows are her and Henry.
She's in this place of, that's the only thing I can think of. That's the only thing I can think is what could make him actually this mad. But how would he have figured that out? How would he have known? Henry wouldn't have given me up. So how did he find out? Is he a magician? I'm not saying her brain went there, but I'm saying if this had been Catherine 10 chapters ago.
Oh, yeah. She would have been like, he has mind reading abilities.
He knows that I think he's evil.
He knows I thought he murdered his wife.
And Catherine is just so confused and Eleanor just cannot tell her.
And do you think Eleanor knows why?
So, have I offended the general? Said Catherine in a faltering voice. Alas, for my feelings as a daughter, all that I know, all that I answer for, is that you can have given him no just cause of offense. So, yes, I think she knows, but I don't think she's been allowed to say anything.
Yeah, I kind of took that more as she's like, I can't think of any reason that my dad would say that. All I know is this is my dad.
Right. I guess that's the other thing that she's like, he has a bad temper. So nobody ever really knows what logic goes on in his brain that sends him off and into one of these moods. It's almost framed as this is not an uncommon occurrence for him to be this angry.
And for him to make a decision like this and send word and everyone just has to jump and do what he says.
Yeah.
And Catherine lays awake all night thinking about it. And she basically is like ready to go first thing in the morning. She's like, well, if I'm not welcome here, I'm not going to try and delay this.
I think probably Catherine laid down in bed for like half an hour and was like, well, if I can't sleep, I guess I'll pack.
And then they have like an awkward, sad breakfast together.
Yeah. I guess whenever I read this passage of her and Eleanor having this quiet moment together where they're both kind of holding back tears, I think it even in this moment when they are both shattered, there's comfort in just being shattered together. And I think that that really speaks to how strong this friendship and this bond is between them, that I'm sure Eleanor is carrying this weight and this guilt at not being able to actually comfort her friend. But I do appreciate that towards the end of all of it, Eleanor has the forethought to be like, do you have money? Okay, I can't fix anything else, but this is something that I can do. Let's make sure you get home.
I don't want to have to worry too much about you. And I'm already exceedingly worried.
And I think even though this very scary thing is happening to Catherine, I feel so reassured in Eleanor's love for Catherine in these moments that it's like, haha, okay, we knew this already, but it is very clear the general is the villain. He's the one who's sitting in the background cackling. And Eleanor is doing what she can to subvert his evil.
Well, and she's also putting herself at risk because she asks Catherine to write her to make sure she gets home safe.
Mm-hmm.
And she's like, you have to address it not as yourself. Pretend you're someone else because this is difficult and dangerous for me to ask for that letter anyways. But I need to know you got home safe.
She's asking that she address it to Alice.
Oh, I thought she was asking that it be addressed as Alice.
No, it's the direction. Direct to me at Lord Longtown's, and I must ask it undercover to Alice. But I love Goody Two-Shoes Catherine being like, if I'm not allowed to write to you, I don't want to get you in trouble. And Eleanor just, you can feel Eleanor's pain in this moment, in this parting. Her heart's breaking.
Both of theirs are, yeah.
I think Catherine is still stuck in confusion. And I think Eleanor knows that her dad's wrath, and she knows she's probably never going to see this friend again. And it does make me wonder, has this happened to her before?
This must have happened before, that she's like, not that surprised. Like, yeah, this is my dad. This is what he does. Oh yeah, I should think about if you have money, because the last person this happened to didn't have money and they got stuck somewhere.
That she's just been so isolated. Anytime she would get close to someone, if they didn't meet his standards, she'd have to cut them out. And I think a piece of probably why this is so painful is that for not just a month, because her dad started being kind to Catherine in Bath too. They were there for weeks. So for weeks, her dad has been giving her permission to love this person. So it must hurt so much more because she let that guard down that she probably was very practiced at not doing. Like, even thinking back to how she acted early and that quietness about her, and that it seems very gentle, and she is, but it's recognizing that that might also be a protection because she can't get too close to people, because what if they get ripped away from her? She had that happen with her mom, but how many times has her dad had this happen with friends? The fact that her older brother is her best bud indicates that she is not allowed to have a circle of friends.
She's very isolated.
Which, like, you would think that this young person whose father is very rich would be someone who could have a large gaggle of friends, but she's not allowed to.
Yeah, so it makes you wonder, like, how many times has this happened before that she's just learned not to get close to people? And how devastating is it for her to have let someone in and then have it happen again?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's sad.
It's so sad. And Henry's not there.
And Catherine gets in the carriage and they drive the same route that it was to Woodston. And she's very sad about it because she's like, last time I was on this drive, everything felt wonderful and magical. And we were going to see Henry and it was so nice. And, you know, I was so excited. And now everything has changed. And this drive brings her no joy. It's interesting because the journey in itself had no terrors for her, is the second line in this chapter. And I just think about, like, how, like, that's where it feels like the whimsy in Catherine has gone away, in a moment where, like, she probably should be a little more scared versus when she was driving out to Northanger the first time and was like, ooh, there's going to be robbers and we're going to get pulled over. This is the moment where she should be a little bit more scared, but she's just so sad. And she's like, it doesn't matter at this point. Okay, I'm sad. I just want to get home. I just want to be with my family.
I think that this is a moment where Catherine probably is somewhat cut off from her emotions, because every time it seems like she dips into them, she basically bursts into tears. Mm-hmm. And I think there's kind of this idea that she almost, like, she's a little bit of a shell as she's heading on this trip. And kind of that continues when she gets home, too.
Well, and Jane Austen puts it well in this. She describes, you know, what it's like for a heroine to come home after being successful and all the wonderful things that'll happen. She writes, "But my affair is widely different. I bring back my heroine to her home in solitude and disgrace, and no sweet elation of spirit can lead me into minuteness." And it's an interesting shift back to the author's voice, because we haven't had Jane Austen's voice in this in a little while in the same way. And for her to step out and be like, yeah, this is not a happy time. And like, I need you to know that as I write this, I know this is not a happy time.
And she's not returning triumphant from her adventure. And I think it's a good sort of nod to, again, that sort of Catherine basically comes home and she's just at the same point as she was at the start. She's not in danger. Her life hasn't been ruined in terms of her prospects or her circumstances or any of that. She's just emotionally devastated. And I think that is a lot of what being 17, 18 feels like, that adventure actually isn't fun. Adventure is often devastating and not understanding why. Because, like, her mom very much slides into, oh, well, I'm glad I didn't know that you were traveling because I would have been really worried about you, but you're here now and no harm was done. So the general doesn't matter to our lives. Let's just move along. Which is like a very, you're like, oh, okay, this is where the Moreland children get this mentality of like, well, we'll just like brush it off. It's not that big a deal. Moving along. Happy, happy. Her mom doesn't understand that this is emotionally devastating to Catherine. And it's so invalidating and dismissive. But that probably worked in the past to get Catherine to stop being upset about something. It was just to be like, okay, like, let's objectively look at what harm was actually caused here. You're probably fine. You scraped your knee because you fell down, but you're probably okay. Okay? Yeah? Okay. Let's move on. Let's go play again. And that worked.
That's not an inappropriate response to, oh, you fell down and scraped your knee. This is very different than falling down and scraping your knee. It does, for me, when I think about it, like, show how different parenting responses can be appropriate in certain settings, but are not universally applicable.
Well, and her mom also talks about what happened to James and Isabella.
Mm-hmm.
And she's just, we must live and learn. The next new friends you make, I hope, will be better worth keeping. And she's just like, yeah, like, no, don't hold on to anything. Like, we're going to live and learn and keep moving forward. And it is so toxic positivity that it's just so hard to watch. And I think also we've talked about, like, that these are not bad parents, but I think this clearly indicates how much they are not in tune with their kids.
Mm-hmm.
And not in tune with what their kids need. And I think back to the very beginning where there was this discussion of not giving her as much money as other people might for someone going to Bath and just having her right home and not preparing her for like the social etiquette of things, and that there was this carelessness that they did these things about, which in one light can look really wholesome, but in another light, you're like, you're kind of like emotionally dismissive and not meeting your child's needs.
the word that sometimes comes to mind with them is like, I think they're also maybe a little naive. And I know that word gets applied to Catherine a lot, but it's kind of like, well, where do you think she like developed this attitude and this style? And I don't actually think it's naivete, but I could see how someone would say that, yeah, they're just a very naive family. I think she has been raised by parents who haven't necessarily emotionally helped regulate and caretake for her in the way she needs. And therefore, she's ended up coming across as very naive because she hasn't really been taught about the world in any way.
I think like that's an aspect of it, of just kind of like go with the flow. The world is what it is. Read your Bible, be happy. But I think there's also an aspect in it that for me feels like there's a lack of emotional depth here, and that it's almost if you aren't happy, you're doing something wrong. And I think that makes sense why Catherine would end up being such an anxious kid if that's what she grew up in, because anytime she had a feeling that wasn't positive, I'm using air quotes, that she would have had to create a story around it to give it a justification instead of it just being allowed to exist.
And I think that maybe comes in with all of her feelings, though. She makes a story for everything she's feeling, good and bad. I think more so with the like uneasiness, the bad feelings, right? That's how she gets to General Tilney being a murderer. But I do think that applies across to all of her emotions. Until something like this has happened. And now I think she's reconciling, like, there's no story for this. This is just bad.
Well, and devastating to her. She carries on after her mom says that she hopes she'll make new friends that are better worth keeping. And Catherine, you can tell, is almost like angry and says, no friend can be better worth keeping than Eleanor. And her mom's like, well, if so, you'll meet again.
I get like that's a calming platitude, but it doesn't actually mean anything. Like, it's just words.
And it's very much like just trust in fate. And I hate fate as a like concept of you need to rely on it. You're not saying anything.
There's nothing within your power or control or will versus, yep, like life will just work itself out. But life works itself out. Not because life just works itself out. Like, there is a lot of effort and action and things that happen that cause life to work out.
I mean, that ends. You just went through some really scary, hard. You just lost some friends. You're allowed to be sad, Catherine. Why can't her mom be saying that? Like, oh my God. Like, it makes so much sense that you're feeling a little bit down. Instead of, well, you'll make better friends. It's so dismissive. I guess I wonder if this also is speaking to Catherine's growth, in that her mom's sort of trying to cheer her up isn't working because Catherine understands the world now. Catherine knows that the world isn't always a kind place. Catherine knows that you can be deceived by the Isabellas of the world, that you're not going to understand the random acts of a general in the world, that random things can happen that cause you harm, and that it's not just this, like, just trust that the world will turn out nicely. It might not, Mom. It might turn out really badly. And we're talking about, like, the heroine returning at the end of the novel. Catherine's had her growth arc. Right? She started from this very, the girl at the beginning, she was 17, and like naive about what was supposed to happen at a ball. And then she got a little compliment to be like, oh, she's cute. And she felt super good about it. And I wonder if after all of this, if she was put in that space in this moment and someone complimented her, if her walls would be even more up of like, what do you want? I don't trust you. What's the thing you're going to do to me? You're saying nice things to me. What does that mean?
Which we don't necessarily want that for her, right? Like, I am hopeful that we've got two chapters left that like there's a balance between the two. I want her to have a little bit more of a guard up and be a little more protective of herself. But I also don't want her to lose that part where she does want to see the best in people and does hope for the best, with an understanding that, like, yeah, that might not happen.
And the thing is, I don't hear Catherine going through like a laundry list of the general is horrible and like my friends weren't who I thought they were. Yes, okay, Isabella. So, like, I guess it's not like Catherine's going to be turned to that space of not trusting. I think Catherine has better beat on genuineness. And I think that's why her mom's words, at least, are landing for me, but it seems like are landing for Catherine as well, feel superficial because they aren't speaking to the root of what she's feeling.
I imagine the Moreland parents as like maybe a little emotionally shallow in that like they don't feel or appreciate emotions to depth. I think they probably think that feelings and emotions are a transient passing state versus something that can have deep, long-lasting impact.
I guess I also hear a little piece from her mom of kind of like, if it doesn't bring you joy, set it free and better things will come your way. And so I also wonder if there's an aspect of how they've set up their lives and how they live of choosing not to be upset by things by not putting themselves in circumstances where they're going to be possibly upset by things.
Yeah, they live a very sheltered life for a reason.
For me, it's not necessarily shallowness of feeling so much as is shallowness of thought. But even in this moment, her mom, instead of being like, Catherine is allowed to have complex feelings about this really devastating situation. James is allowed to be upset about this horrible situation that happened with his ex-fiance. But her mom's just, we're moving on already.
I mean, I do appreciate that the Allens are still the Allens when she goes to see them, but at least Mrs. Allen just keeps being like, I don't like him. He's not a nice man. She doesn't know what to say, but she knows that there's something wrong here.
Well, she took her lead from her husband and then just basically repeated what he said, then brought Catherine back to, oh, you remember that time and Mr. Tilney had tea with us and wasn't it a great night? And then, oh, I might be upsetting Catherine. I don't like that general. Mrs. Allen, you're still Mrs. Allen.
I appreciate that they are constant.
And I think that's a piece of Catherine going home and recognizing that Fullerton is unaltered, but she is.
You can go home, but it doesn't mean that it's still home for you.
Yeah.
I appreciate where this chapter ends, and she's thinking about Henry is now back at Northanger. He knows that I'm not there anymore. He probably knows why. I assume Eleanor has told him. And now they're all heading off on this trip that they're supposed to be taking that I know nothing about.
Yep, this weird, weird trip.
I will say, I don't actually know if I believe that there is a trip.
Okay.
I think it's a made-up trip that the general was like, well, I have to have a reason for kicking her out. We're going away. And then he like just makes other really mean-spirited decisions. And I guess maybe I believe that they are going to go on this trip, but I don't actually believe that they needed to go on this trip.
He created a trip to get rid of Catherine. Did this surprise you?
I don't think I was super surprised. What I'll say, I did not predict this happening. I also thought it would be Captain Tilney in the carriage and that like there would be something there, but I'm not surprised by the general's actions.
You seem less confused than Catherine.
Because I think it's about the money. I also didn't really fully think he was a murderer and Catherine was off in Murderland for a long time. So I feel like as a reader, I had more time to be like, there's something weird about this guy. I don't know what it is, but it's weird, and I'm gonna have my guard up about him versus like he is a murderer.
I will say, and I guess remind you that you liked him at the start.
Yeah, but so did Catherine.
Right. So I'm saying, I think we've had more objectivity because we've been thinking about this as courting. I don't know if Catherine has still connected the dots around marrying Henry. Like, I think she was just starting to get there
Right.
of like, oh, that's what this is about. Like, I don't think she's understood that she was at her boyfriend's.
I think that's part of it. I guess I question whether I would have been more surprised by this if we weren't doing this podcast and I was just reading this book. I mean, we deep dive into every chapter.
Right, and I'm sure I've spoiled you a little bit.
And I think if you had asked me, even 10 chapters ago who the villains were. Like, it was the Thorpes, 100%. And do I think that they're still villains? Yes, but maybe minor villains. Although, I don't know, maybe my prediction is that they show up in the last two chapters to, I don't know, kidnap Catherine.
Burn down Fullerton.
You never know with those two. It's possible.
But I think even if you weren't reading it for this podcast, I think you would have caught on that everybody else was thinking of getting Henry and Catherine together except Catherine. I think back to the comments that the general was making when they were at Woodson, and Catherine being completely oblivious to what he was saying, just thinking he was complimenting her by being like, you heard, like, she wants the cottage to stay. It's going to stay, Henry. And thinking that he just thought so highly of her that he was taking that. And it's like, Catherine, no, he's saying it because he thinks you're going to live here. Where have you been? She's got blinders on to the fact that people could actually like her. Yeah. Which is like why I think someone like Isabella was able to get her claws in so well is because Catherine doesn't think that she's that great.
We would probably characterize her as having low self-worth.
She's not in a place where I would say that she has low self-esteem.
No.
She just doesn't think that she's almost like surprised when somebody likes her. And it's very much like, oh, poor Catherine having led such an isolated life.
I don't think Catherine thinks she's the main character.
Catherine wants to.
Yes, I don't think she genuinely believes she's the main character in her own life.
No, I think she thinks that things might happen to or around her. And I think that's a piece of why she's kind of continuously seeking mystery. Yeah, is because she wants to be special. Mm-hmm. And it's so weird that every time Henry would say something that made her feel special, she felt special, but she didn't catch on to the fact that she was special.
Right.
Like, it never actually got internalized on that level of truth. It was internalized on that level of, I'm so happy and gratified that he thought that of me. And yeah, it would be weird, I think, to sit with Catherine in a counseling room. And I mean, me being the person that I am would be like, okay, dial this back a little bit. Why don't you think you're worth being attended to? Like, why don't you think he would like you? Why didn't you think Eleanor would want you to stay longer? What's going on in that little head? And it makes me again think about her upbringing and what was happening there. Obviously, these children are instilled with good values, with thinking that people are genuinely good, with trying to make sure that they do good in the world. And not, I don't think, from places of disingenuousness. These are people who genuinely want to do good. At least Catherine is. But what in that didn't get conveyed to them that they were also special?
There's something missing in that. And part of me wonders, is that a product of like there just being so many of them?
I think that there's like a level of neglect that definitely happened in Catherine's life that she didn't get special attention. And I, you know, you think back to those early chapters where her parents were kind of like, oh, Catherine is kind of pretty now. And it's like, you're saying this in front of your kid.
They're not the nicest parents sometimes.
And I don't think that they would see it that way. But it is that way.
Lots of parents worry about how they might fuck their kids up. And sometimes it is hard to see how. Oh, yeah, that comes from me and my parenting style and my kid.
And I think this is like a really good example of like Catherine did not have a traumatic life. Her isolation is different from Eleanor's isolation. You don't see that piece of Catherine of not wanting to be close to people and that fearfulness of being close to people and that necessary permission to be close to people. She just literally didn't have opportunities. She lived in this very small sphere that she's probably known her entire life. Whereas Eleanor was isolated from what we can read about things. And I think this is an example of the attachment style being passed on, the worldview being passed on, that generational perspective being passed on to Catherine, and it having layers of toxicity in it that are not innately harmful from like an overall outside. But when you start dividing it out, especially in this situation, which I think it's okay to say that this is a traumatic situation. When she is faced with a traumatic situation, her parents don't give her an adaptation of like, it is okay to be upset. They're just in the same, well, life goes on. It is what it is. And that isn't what you want to hear in this type of situation. But I guess also, are her parents equipped to understand?
It could be multi-generational.
It's those interesting layers of things where even when you are well-intentioned, that doesn't mean you're going to understand the impact.
Yeah, you're right, Kate. It's hard to read and hard to watch. And I just feel so bad for Catherine in these chapters.
The feeling of these chapters is so heavy.
Yeah, it's an interesting place for us to leave off with two chapters left. This is not even third act breakup. This is like final inning, 2 minutes to go in the play, breakup.
Yeah.
Not a lot left to redeem this story. And I guess there is a little part of me that's like, this is a gothic parody. Maybe Jane Austen's just going to leave it and be like, yep, shit sucks.
Right. No happily ever after. Not everyone gets one.
And so part of me wonders if that might happen. I think I am hopeful that Tilney will still come through and find a way. I don't know, maybe General Tilney will have an epiphany and be like, oh, we liked that girl, and let her back in. I don't know.
Okay, so with that, what are your predictions?
I think I'm between those two. I think I'm between the prediction that it just ends and things are kind of sad, and you're like, well, that's sad. Sad ending. Or Tilney comes back and is like, I love you. Let's get married. And then they get married.
Okay.
I don't know which one to believe more. I'm leaning towards the it ends sadly, but we do have two chapters left, and I don't know how much sadder we can get. I don't know, like maybe Catherine dies. I don't know how we get sadder than like she just got kicked out of her boyfriend's house and can't go back. So
right, and have it still be a Jane Austen novel.
So I guess Tilney has to come and like swoop in and save the day.
Okay.
I don't know how that's going to happen, but I guess that's my prediction.
Okay. Did you have a favorite quote? These weren't necessarily the most, they're heavy chapters, but they're not necessarily the most quotable.
No, I like this quote by Henry. If the effect of his behavior does not justify him with you, we had better not seek after the cause.
Mm.
I think that's just good life advice. Like, if you're already feeling weird about it, like, don't even go down that rabbit hole. You don't need to. You can just feel what you're feeling. It's okay.
Yeah.
Which like is interesting in contrast to the Moreland approach, which is like, everything will be fine, versus Tilney being like, you already know you don't like him. We don't need to keep on this topic about why you don't like him.
I mean, like, how great is Henry that he's not trying to convince her to like his brother? He knows the truth about his brother, and he's not trying to justify his brother's actions so much as just like, I understand him, and he's fortunate that his way of being hasn't impacted him. And that's literally the only difference between him and Isabella, is that this impacted her, it didn't impact him.
And it's less likely to ever impact him.
Yeah. And I think, again, the secure attachment that he breathes in that quote that you just stated there, where he's like, you don't have to like my brother. We're allowed to disagree on these things. I can love him and you can hate him. And that's okay. Again, it is like, I just love him so much for this like space of security, and that Catherine is allowed to just be Catherine, and he is good with that.
With that in mind, I guess you probably wouldn't love Tilney so much if he didn't actually show up at the end. So I am leaning toward Tilney shows up at the end. Otherwise, you'd be like, what the fuck? Like, he just disappears in the end? So mad.
That would be very, very extra devastating.
Do you have a favorite quote?
I don't have necessarily a favorite quote, but the one that I think speaks to why Catherine and I get along, and I guess also why I hope if I ever were to be in a relationship again, I would find my Henry, is because of how his security and Eleanor's security just put her at ease and don't cause her more anxiety. So this is after she's been gratified that they both want her to stay. She did almost always believe that Henry loved her, and quite always that his father and sister loved her and even wished her to belong to them. And believing so far, her doubts and anxieties were merely sportive irritations.
Mm-hmm.
And that's literally what a secure attachment does to your anxieties. It helps you put them back in context of like, what if they hate me? Okay, but that's not reality. That's not actually how I feel. That's not how they make me feel. And I can just go ask them and they will reassure me and not think that I'm ridiculous for asking that.
Right. And they'll tell me the truth.
Oh, and it speaks to why Catherine, this human with this anxious attachment who will do the people pleasing of falling into step with an Isabella, needs an Eleanor and a Henry in her life to help put her back on secure ground and recognize that her anxieties aren't ridiculous, but they aren't reality. They're sportive irritations. I love this book so much from an attachment perspective. Oh, it makes me so happy.
This is definitely our most secure attachment representation that we've read so far in Jane Austen.
Yeah. I think Darcy gets to secure attachment.
He doesn't start there, though.
No. Would you put him in avoidant?
Yes.
And where would you put Lizzie?
I think probably anxious.
I actually think that Lizzie has a secure attachment style, but she gets led down the path of untruth.
I think she has secure attachments with her sister and her best friend, but I don't think she applies that in the same way to a romantic relationship. And I think her strong convictions about love and romance maybe even put her into a like anxious avoidant of like, if it's not that, it's never going to happen. So I don't know if I necessarily see her as fully secure.
I guess that makes sense. You highlighting it that way of kind of her expectations of romance being so high that she has put herself in a space of avoidance. She also hasn't had romance in her life.
Exactly.
I don't think that her response to Collins is an avoidant response.
No.
I think that is a justified fuck off response.
I agree. But I do think that it also takes her a while. And then she does become kind of anxiously attached to Darcy. I don't think either one of them starts in a super secure place. I think they get there, but I don't think they start there.
I actually don't think that her attachment to Darcy is an anxious attachment later on. I think she is anxious because she feels like it is not a possibility. I think if we were to analyze her relationship with Wickham and how easily he can pull her in by just liking her and making her feel special, that would speak to an anxious attachment because it's not about depth. It is about running with feeling and that feeling not having a secure, solid ground.
Yeah.
Like Catherine and Tilney's relationship, there's not a lot of conflict in their relationship. The relationship is not the conflict in this story. It is just soft and developing and it gets to just be. And that's what secure attachment relationships should be. Mm-hmm. There shouldn't be a lot of drama in their relationship. And I think Catherine got pulled in a little bit by Isabella and some of the drama and the feels that go along with being special to someone. That anxious attachment really shows in that connection. I don't know. Anyway, yes, this is how I read romance novels.
Yes, you do love a secure attachment. That is your style.
Soft, 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 soft.
Well, I guess we have two chapters left of hopefully some more softness. We will see. And we'll do a little bit of a recap at the end of the whole book and what I can remember. Considering today I couldn't remember Wickham's name or Charlotte's for a good minute. I don't know how much I remember of the start of this book, but we'll recap it anyways.
So what's going to happen is we're going to finish the two chapters and then you're going to have forgotten the entire story. So I get to spend half of the podcast just recapping all of my favorite moments and highlights from Northanger Abbey.
And we'll maybe do a little comparison a little bit more to Pride and Prejudice and my thoughts between the two from what I can remember of either of them. I don't know. My brain's like a sieve sometimes. And I think we're going to post a poll on our Instagram and on Kate's meme account at Austen Therapy to see what people want us to read next. We've been talking about there's a couple things coming up for us. So we're probably going to do some of the mini series for Pride and Prejudice and the Northanger movie coming up. But then we do want to know what book we're preparing for so I can go buy a copy of it because I got to go find a used copy in the bookstore. Hopefully that'll be easy. I assume it will. Do you have other thoughts or things that we should warn our listeners about for next episode?
No, I don't think so. I'm just excited that someone else has read one of my favorite books. And now I will get to you. Do you think that you're done talking about this book because we're almost done this podcast? No, I have sucked you into my circle and we will talk about Henry Tilney forever.
I mean, we talked about Henry Tilney before I was sucked into this circle.
No, no, I talked about Henry Tilney. Now you will have to give input to.
Well, and we will continue doing this podcast, so we'll do some comparison between this and whatever we read next.
Yeah, nobody can hold a candle to Tilney for me, ever. Tilney is best, so that debate won't go very far with me.
I mean, I'll admit, when I think about Darcy versus Tilney, is it okay if I choose Lizzie?
100%, go for that. Yeah, I think that Tilney and Lizzie have really good energy. I actually read a fanfic once where the two couples met and Tilney and Lizzie basically have a tease off. And I think that that really speaks to the end of Pride and Prejudice, where Lizzie basically says that Darcy isn't yet used to being teased. And Georgiana is like, why are you talking to my brother this way? And she's like, a wife is allowed certain liberties with their husband. And you can tell that she teases him in these sort of like playful, fun, cute, soft ways. And I think that Tilney and Lizzie would get along so well. And then you have your two anxious babies in the corner with Catherine and Darcy being like, yeah, I married that.
Yep.
Oh, yeah. So, and no, pick Lizzie. That's great. Go for it.
That's where I'm at so far. I mean, we still got two chapters. Maybe Tilney will hit it out of the park. But right now, I'm Team Lizzie.
I'm glad that you've mentioned that, because now my brain is like firing off with the fact that when we read Pride and Prejudice, I identify with Mr. Darcy. Like, personally, with his social awkwardness, with his missteps, with his need to grow and understand the world from a different perspective, with his desire to do good but not always doing good, I understand Darcy, this little awkward being. I also understand Catherine, this little anxious baby.
There are definitely parts of their anxiety that I resonate with, but I think in a different way than you do.
Oh, probably. But this is basically, we will have plenty, and by we, I mean I will have plenty to talk about next episode when we compare.
Excellent. So tune in for next episode. Thank you for listening. You can follow us on Instagram at Austin Therapy Podcast and Kate's meme account at Austin Therapy. Like I already mentioned, keep an eye out for that poll coming so you can tell us what we're going to read next. Maybe we'll do it and maybe we won't, but I think we most likely will.
You are trapped. You are doing, even if this takes us forever, you are reading the rest of the books.
Yeah, and I know that too, but I'm just saying maybe we just won't read what they want.
Oh, that's fair. Okay.
We're not ending the podcast. I was not a, like, maybe we'll just stop doing this.
Well, I'm worried that you don't love it as much as I do. And I know you won't, because I'm obsessed, but
we have different obsessions and that's okay. Anyways, thank you for listening and we will see you all at the next podcast. All right.
Bye. Bye.